That's an old Coke can.
Yeah, very old Coke can.
Do you know what it feels like, a film set?
See all the posters.
And then you've got that one that the Continental Holidays make it simply perfect.
Withered, but still hanging on, surrounded by glass shards and barbed wire, all remain untouched in the silence that splits the country of Cyprus, the Green Line. Corporal Sean McRoberts guides me through the dusty mess of a once futuristic location.
Back in 1968, they built the airport here. So this was brand new. It was all like, you probably walk in, you could smell the fresh paint. It was amazing. The passport control is all upstairs and there's no security.
Why is that? Is it because it would have been a lot more lax?
If you think about it, back in the 70s, not many people flew. It was reserved for like the rich and the famous.
And these skylights as well.
They wanted to make the actual airport feel light and airy. Putting skylights into, you've got plenty of daylight coming in. But obviously the colour on the wall is light, makes the room feel bigger than what it actually is. And people used to come here just to do day visits. So they come, they go up, and they'd actually go out to the front, and you would actually see across the airfield and watch planes take off and land. It was a treat. It was, you know, it was something very unique. The sound, the smells. They loaded aircraft up here, along here, and you didn't see lots and lots of aeroplanes in the sky. So it was something very special.
Built in the 60s, this once bustling hub fell silent in July 1974. With political tensions rising, Turkish paratroopers descended on the airport as Greek Cypriot troops faced similar conflict across the island. Standing on the roof of the airport, Sean points above shattered skylights to the mountains in the distance.
We're looking across to where the north side is and the mountains and all the paratroopers that started to land across directly ahead of us.
So you would have literally been here, woken up in the morning and seen them coming your way.
Someone was actually up here and he was thinking, well, them paratroopers are getting close. And then they started to fire rounds at the actual UN personnel. So obviously their camp was woken up, which is to our right, and everyone sort of come up here. It was like an exchange of rounds of British Canadians that were actually here, taking fire off of the Turkish forces and exchanging fire with them. We actually saw, before we come out on our pre-deployment training, snippet of like a newsreel of it happening actually at the time. So in 1974 there was a reporter out there and you can actually see the actual Turkish paratroopers landing behind him. I come up here and stood here and looked. Wow.
It was this conflict that prompted the United Nations to take control of the area in a ceasefire and create the buffer zone as we know it today, also called the Green Line. This undisturbed 180 kilometres spans the length of Cyprus and has been left physically untouched since 1974. How do the UN operate and negotiate in this silence, and are there any benefits in doing so? Looking for answers with Optosca, the British contribution, I follow Gunnar Maisie Stack through rusting gates and broken rock.
So what are we going through now? What's this bit? This
is called Paphos Gate.
This is the start of entering the buffer zone.
At 180 kilometres, the buffer zone, otherwise known as the Green Line, spans the length of Cyprus where homes, cars, past lives were left deserted after the conflict of 1974. Watching my step as I follow the patrol, I turn to Captain Ian Prowse. What are the British doing here?
So Optosca is the British contribution to the UN force in Cyprus. The UN mission in Cyprus has been going for 60 years. Optosca has been going now 40 rotations, we're Optosca 40. The UN is here to maintain the status quo between the two opposition forces. We're here to make sure nothing changes for the duration of our tour.
Making sure things stay the same is easier said than done. This is made clear as we step out from the cicadas into the middle of a city.
So we're walking down Ledger Street in Nicosia, city centre.
We are passing by locals, civilians, and you're in your uniform.
Yes. This is the only split capital city. So we're here working for the UN, and therefore, yeah, we're welcome to conduct our job in uniform in the town centre, which is, yeah, certainly different from other operational theatres.
Nicosia, the only split capital in the world, with a green line running right through it. An oddity that Gunnar Maisie Stack feels is reflected in the peacekeeping role.
Certain things that we'd normally be allowed to do as a soldier on a tour, we can't do here.
Is there any examples you can give me?
Searching. If I found someone in the buffer zone, wouldn't be able to stop them or search them, where in a normal military environment, you're allowed to do initial searches and stop someone.
It must be very strange.
Yeah.
However, it is the difficulty of the job that makes it so appealing, and the uniqueness of the role that fits Private Ian Yachnikov and his fellow 200 soldiers currently on Optoska.
With Four Power, because we are all reserves, you can get a wide variety of people. Your full crew could be a manager at Jaguar. Your Tom next to you could be a lawyer. Myself, a support worker, I've become more patient and better at dealing with people and trying to come to common understandings. You can play to different people's strengths due to their full-time job.
Roles for reservists, adjusting expectations and valuing the differences of your peers. The benefits of operating in the buffer zone are starting to shine through. Diving deeper into the details of what exactly is inside the green line, Ian raises his voice above the screaming cicadas.
You'll find that like some places around here are quite literally frozen in time. So on the East Ayan, you've got the journalist car. It's almost like a memorial where a journalist was driving down and one of the sides ended up lighting it up. So the journalist died in there and they couldn't extract him out because he was in the buffer zone. So that car is still in the buffer zone and we drive past it every now and then.
The AO areas of operation span the length of the country, all 180 kilometres of the Green Line. With some parts being a few kilometres wide, Gunner Maisie Stagg shows me where the boundaries are mere metres from each other.
This side of the road you have a Turkish position, an area where it was once manned by soldiers, and then this side over here is one of the Greek positions.
We're talking literally, how big would you say that road is?
4 metres. One of the alleyways is called Spear Alley. They used to say that they could attach a bayonet to the end of a stick and literally just stab each other.
In such close quarters, was it really entirely evacuated during the conflict of 1974? Maisie points out a couple of anomalies who, in typical Cypriot style, would not be told what to do.
So down the other side of Ledger, it's got loads of stories to it. Really interesting. So there's one called Otter's Cafe. When the conflict was going on, each side used to stop what they were doing, go grab coffee from the same coffee shop, and then pick up their weapons and go back to fighting. He refused to leave.
Though locals are rarely permitted inside the buffer zone now, that does not mean it's entirely deserted.
This is Maple House. So troops a couple of years ago used to use this as a platoon house, so they used to sleep in here and operate from this building.
In the buffer zone?
In the buffer zone, yeah.
And why has it been vacated since then?
The state of the buildings now, it's not as safe as it used to be, running water and everything. And because where we are in Ledger Palace Hotel, that is buffer zone as well. So we are still technically within the buffer zone.
The UN's accommodation arrangements highlights how embedded they are into their roles. Maintaining such an uneasy balance, history heavy, with no resolution in sight, is a challenge Private Ian Yachnikov is keen to accept.
The different levels of responsibility is vast. It does provide confidence, whether they're going to be rising up the ranks through Lance Corporal, Corporal, or like myself, who I'm looking to commission. So it's providing that experience and being able to have the confidence in the job of knowing what I'm doing.
The understanding you earn from operating in an area like the Green Line seems invaluable. After learning about living in the zone, I take a step back to see the bigger picture. United Nations, international relations, how do they work together in this environment?
Only mate, yes. It's a kind of tea, Argentinian traditional drink for morning. It's like a tea.
Sipping a drink from his homeland, Captain Rua represents one of the countries who are part of the United Nations peacekeeping force in Cyprus. Another is Captain Mate, the lead from Hungary and the organiser of my trip, keen to share the UN story from inside the Green Line.
There are five nations comprising this unit: UK, which is the framework nation, Argentina, Slovakia, Hungary, and Serbia. From command perspective, obviously, this is very interesting, difficult indeed, to command a multinational unit and from different countries, different cultures, different trainings, to have everything all together. This is our mission here.
Working to keep their environment unchanged is tricky. Doing it alongside those who have grown up in a completely different culture is much harder. Mate smiles as he describes how these professional relationships have led to personal appreciation.
When it comes to Argentina, they are really, really, really famous for their asado nights. I can tell you that the Argentinian asado is a plus thing. Also, we cook Hungarian goulash and people usually like that. We also do some Serbian meat. So we have welfare days and welfare nights and bonding nights, as you mentioned, quite regularly. And it's a great occasion to build some unit cohesion.
Captain Rua is not only learning from his colleagues, but from the practicality of the mission itself.
For Argentina, particularly, is a great opportunity to improve because we don't have real operational activities. We have training, but we don't have conflict. Nothing happens. So coming here to mission so we can put in practice what we learn and also be with other nations with different forms. Everything is changing and you learn a lot with other people from other countries.
When asking people what they will take away from this experience, Rua gives me the simplest answer.
Friendship.
Yeah?
Yeah, for me, I made a lot of friends here because in Argentina it's like officers in one side, there's no commission officers in the other side. But here it's like we are all together working. So I have a lot of non-commissioned officers now who I can say they are my friends. And probably in the future we are going to meet in Argentina or maybe in London and someplace. And I'm really grateful of that. These amazing people we have here. I was not expecting that.
From living in the confines of the Green Line to having colleagues from across the world, the personal and professional knowledge gained from this operation is vast. But there are unexpected positives as well. On the balcony of Nicosia Airport, Corporal Sean McRoberts looks at the undisturbed landscape beyond.
It's almost like what we'd have or call a nature reserve in UK because it's not loads and loads of people, loads of traffic going through it. You find nature has started to claim the area back for itself. I've driven along tracks, found snakes. I've even had a face-off with a barn owl sat in front of me truck. So I've had to wait for him to decide he wants to leave. They're in abundance.
Nature moves on, despite the physical and political restrictions of the buffer zone. In fact, no matter who I spoke to, the tangential benefits of the UNPFC shone through. Trooper Dylan Wright recounted the mechanical lessons learnt from the conflict.
The day of the intervention, Cyprus Airways had 4 aircraft at the airport. These were a Trident 5 BDEB. This one was cannibalised, the mechanical organ donor, so 2 of them could actually be flown out and escape. And that wasn't until 1977 by British Airways, and they became part of the British Airways fleet. And one of them still now remains in the Imperial War Museum in Duxford.
The mission is heavy with history, and Captain Ian Prowse has accommodated people from across the world who'd like to know more.
We've been in Soldier magazine every month, at least 1 article, 2 articles. We've had loads of interest what we've been doing out here. We've already hosted over 120 visits in our 4 months, on average 2 a day.
Now I feel like a burden.
Oh, no, absolutely
one
not.
Out of 120 people.
We have some celebrities who want to come see. We have some dignitaries, formal media, informal media. And it's all just getting the narrative out about this tour, where it sits in terms of physical location, but also the context is probably the only peacekeeping tour where UK has got these types of numbers deployed.
The conflict itself may not be resolved, but progress is persistent. It feels like more time is needed to heal this scar of Cyprus. And those working inside the Green Line, including Captain Mate,
flies here. I've been here for 2 years, and I can tell you that we are going in the right direction. It's not easy, but we could achieve it. It's such a lovely thing to have all these kind of people here together and work for peace. And time really, really quickly flies here. BFBS, the Forces Station.